to avoid wheat instead, because it made me lose the hair on top of my head. More so than cultivating a man-like heavage, losing my hair would have captured my attention. Hot chili peppers really don't trigger hair growth on the chest or elsewhere, but wheat can indeed trigger hair loss. Hair can be a very intimate thing for many people, a personal signature of appearance and personality. For some people, losing hair can be as devastating as losing an eye or a foot. Hair loss is sometimes unavoidable due to the effects of toxic drugs or dangerous diseases. People undergoing cancer chemotherapy, for instance, temporarily lose their hair, since the agents employed are designed to kill actively reproducing cancer cells, but inadvertently also kill active non-cancerous cells, such as those in hair follicles. The inflammatory disease, systemic lupus erythematosus, which commonly leads to kidney disease and arthritis, can also be accompanied by hair loss due to autoimmune inflammation of hair follicles. Hair loss can occur in more ordinary situations as well. Middle-aged men can lose their hair, followed soon after by an impulse to drive convertible sports cars. Add wheat consumption to the list of causes of hair loss. Alopecia areata refers to hair loss that occurs in patches, usually from the scalp, but occasionally other parts of the body. Alopecia can even involve the entire body, leaving the sufferer completely hairless from head to toe and everything in between. Wheat consumption causes alopecia areata due to a celiac-like inflammation of the skin. The inflamed hair follicle results in reduced hold on each individual hair, which causes shedding. Within the tender spots of hair loss are increased levels of inflammatory mediators, such as tumor necrosis factor, interleukins, and interferons. When caused by wheat, alopecia can persist for as long as wheat consumption continues. Like completing a course of chemotherapy for cancer, elimination of wheat and all gluten sources usually results in prompt resumption of hair growth, no surgical hair plugs or topical creams required. 7-year itch. Kurt came to me because he was told he had high cholesterol. What his doctor labeled high cholesterol proved to be an excess of small LDL particles, low HDL cholesterol, and high triglycerides. Naturally, with this combined pattern, I advised Kurt to eliminate wheat forthwith. He did so, losing 18 pounds over 3 months, all from his belly. But the funny thing was what the diet change did to his rash. Kurt told me that he'd had a reddish-brown rash over his right shoulder, spreading down to his elbow and upper back, that had plagued him for more than 7 years. He'd consulted with 3 dermatologists, resulting in 3 biopsies, none of which led to a firm diagnosis. All 3 agreed, however, that Kurt needed a steroid cream to deal with the rash. Kurt followed their advice, since the rash was at times very itchy, and the creams did provide at least temporary relief. But 4 weeks into his new wheat-free diet, Kurt showed me his right arm and shoulder, completely rash-free. 7 years, 3 biopsies, 3 misdiagnoses. And the solution was as simple as eliminating apple pie. Kiss my sore goodbye. In my experience, acne, mouth sores, a rash on the face or backside, hair loss, or nearly any other abnormality of the skin should prompt consideration of a reaction to wheat gluten. It may have less to do with hygiene, your parents' genes, or sharing towels with friends, than with the turkey sandwich on whole wheat that was yesterday's lunch. How many other foods have been associated with such a protean array of skin diseases? Sure, peanuts and shellfish can cause hives, but what other food can be blamed for such an incredible range of skin diseases, from a common rash all the way to gangrene, disfigurement, and death? I certainly don't know of any other than wheat. The case of the bald baker. I had a heck of a time persuading Gordon to drop the wheat. I met Gordon because he had coronary disease. Among the causes, abundant small LDL particles. I asked him to completely remove the wheat from his diet in order to reduce or eliminate the small LDL particles and thereby obtain better control over his heart health. Problem: Gordon owned a bakery. Bread, rolls, and muffins were part of his life every day, 7 days a week. It was only natural that he would eat his products with most meals. For 2 years, I urged Gordon to drop the wheat, to no avail. One day, Gordon came to the office wearing a ski cap. He told me how he had started to lose clumps of hair, leaving divot-like bald patches scattered over his scalp. His primary care doctor diagnosed alopecia, but couldn't divine a cause. Likewise, a dermatologist was at a loss to explain Gordon's dilemma. The hair loss was very upsetting to him, resulting in his asking his primary care doctor for an antidepressant and concealing the embarrassing situation with a cap. Wheat, of course, was my first thought. It fit Gordon's overall health picture. Small LDL particles, wheat belly body configuration, high blood pressure, pre-diabetic blood sugars, vague stomach complaints, and now hair loss. I made yet another pitch for Gordon to once and for all remove the wheat from his diet. After the emotional trauma of losing most of his hair, and now having to conceal his patchy scalp, he finally agreed. It meant bringing food to his bakery, and not eating his own products, something he had some difficulty in explaining to his employees. Nonetheless, he stuck to it. Within 3 weeks, Gordon reported that hair had begun to sprout up in the bald patches. Over the next 2 months, vigorous growth resumed. Along with his proud pate, he also lost 12 pounds and 2 inches from his waist. The intermittent abdominal distress was gone, as was his pre-diabetic blood sugar. 6 months later, reassessment of his small LDL particles demonstrated 67% reduction. Inconvenient? Perhaps, but it sure beats a toupee. Part 3. Say Goodbye to Wheat. Chapter 13. Goodbye, Wheat. Create a healthy, delicious, wheat-free life. Here's where we get down to the real, practical nitty-gritty. Like trying to rid your bathing suit of sand, it can be tough to remove this ubiquitous food from our eating habits, this thing that seems to cling to every nook, crack, and cranny of American diets. My patients often panic when they realize how much of a transformation they will need to make in the contents of their cupboards and refrigerators, in their well-worn habits of shopping, cooking, and eating. There's nothing left to eat. I'll starve. Many also recognize that more than 2 hours without a wheat product triggers insatiable cravings and the anxiety of withdrawal. When Bob and Jillian patiently hold the hands of Biggest Loser contestants, sobbing over the agony of losing only 3 pounds this week, you have an idea of what wheat elimination can be like for some people. Trust me, it's worth it. If you've gotten this far, I assume that you are at least contemplating a divorce from this unfaithful and abusive partner. My advice, show no mercy. Don't dwell on the good times from 20 years ago, when angel food cake and cinnamon rolls provided consolation after you were fired from your job, or the beautiful 7-layer cake you had at your wedding. Think of the health beatings you've taken, the emotional kicks in the stomach you've endured, the times he begged you to take him back, because he has really changed. Forget it. It won't happen. There is no rehabilitation, only elimination. Spare yourself the divorce court theatrics. Declare yourself free of wheat. Don't ask for alimony or child support. Don't look back or reminisce about the good times. Just run. Brace yourself for health. Forget everything you've learned about healthy whole grains. For years we've been told they should dominate our diet. This line of thinking says that a diet filled with healthy whole grains will make you vibrant, popular, good-looking, sexy, and successful. You will also enjoy healthy cholesterol levels and regular bowel movements. Stint on whole grains, and you will be unhealthy, malnourished, succumb to heart disease or cancer. You'll be thrown out of your country club, barred from your bowling league, and ostracized from society. Instead, remember that the need for healthy whole grains is pure fiction. Grains such as wheat are no more a necessary part of the human diet than personal injury attorneys are to your backyard pool party. Let me describe a typical person with wheat deficiency. Slender, flat tummy, low triglycerides, high HDL, good cholesterol, normal blood sugar, normal blood pressure, high energy, good sleep, normal bowel function. In other words, the sign that you have the wheat deficiency syndrome is that you're normal, slender, and healthy. Contrary to popular wisdom, including that of your friendly neighborhood dietitian, there is no deficiency that develops from elimination of wheat, provided the lost calories are replaced with the right foods. If the gap left by wheat is filled with vegetables, nuts, meats, eggs, avocados, olives, cheese, that is, real food, then not only won't you develop a dietary deficiency, you will enjoy better health, more energy, better sleep, weight loss, and reversal of all the abnormal phenomena we've discussed. If you fill the gap left by excising wheat products with corn chips, energy bars, and fruit drinks, then yes, you will simply have replaced one undesirable group of foods with another undesirable group. You've achieved little. And you may indeed become deficient in several important nutrients, as well as continue in the unique American shared experience of getting fat and becoming diabetic. So removing wheat is the first step. Finding suitable replacements to fill the smaller calorie gap is the second step. Remember, wheat-free people naturally and unconsciously consume 350 to 400 fewer calories per day. In its simplest form, a diet in which you eliminate wheat but allow all other foods to expand proportionally to fill the gap, while not perfect, is still a far cry better than the same diet that includes wheat. In other words, remove wheat and just eat a little more of the foods remaining in your diet. Eat a larger portion of baked chicken, green beans, scrambled eggs, Cobb salad, etc. You may still realize many of the benefits discussed here. However, I'd be guilty of oversimplifying if I suggested that all it takes is removing wheat. If ideal health is your goal, then it does indeed matter what foods you choose to fill the gap left by eliminating wheat. Should you choose to go further than just removing wheat, you must replace lost wheat calories with real food. I distinguish real food from highly processed, herbicided, genetically modified, ready-to-eat, high-fructose corn syrup-filled, just-add-water food products, the ones packaged with cartoon characters, sports figures, and other clever marketing ploys. This is a battle that needs to be fought on all fronts, since there are incredible societal pressures to not eat real food. Turn on the TV, and you won't see ads for cucumbers, artisanal cheeses, or locally raised cage-free eggs. You will be inundated with ads for potato chips, frozen dinners, soft drinks, and the rest of the cheap ingredient, high markup world of processed foods. A great deal of money is spent pushing the products you need to avoid. Kellogg's, known to the public for its breakfast cereals, $6.5 billion in breakfast cereal sales in 2010, is also behind Yoplait yogurt, Häagen-Dazs ice cream, Lärabar health bars, Keebler Graham crackers, Famous Amos chocolate chip cookies, Cheez-It crackers, as well as Cheerios and Apple Jacks. These foods fill supermarket aisles, are highlighted at aisle end caps, are strategically placed at eye level on the shelves, and dominate daytime and nighttime TV. They comprise the bulk of ads in many magazines. And Kellogg's is just one food company among many. Big Food also pays for much of the research conducted by dietitians and nutrition scientists. They endow faculty positions at universities and colleges, and they influence the content of media. In short, they are everywhere. And they are extremely effective. The great majority of Americans have fallen for their marketing, hook, line, and sinker. It's made even more difficult to ignore when the American Heart Association and other health organizations endorse their products. The American Heart Association's Heart Check Mark stamp of approval, for instance, has been bestowed on more than 800 foods, including Honey Nut Cheerios and, until recently, Cocoa Puffs. And here you are trying to ignore them, tune them out, and march to your own drummer. It's not easy. One thing is clear. There is no nutritional deficiency that develops when you stop consuming wheat and other processed foods. Furthermore, you will simultaneously experience reduced exposure to sucrose, high fructose corn syrup, artificial food colorings and flavors, cornstarch, and the list of unpronounceables on the product label. Again, there is no genuine nutritional deficiency from any of this. But this hasn't stopped the food industry and its friends at the USDA, the American Heart Association, the American Dietetic Association, and the American Diabetes Association from suggesting that these foods are somehow necessary for health, and that doing without them might be unhealthy. Nonsense. Absolute, unadulterated, 180-proof, whole-grain nonsense. Some people, for instance, are concerned that they will not consume sufficient fiber if they eliminate wheat. Ironically, if you replace wheat calories with those from vegetables and raw nuts, fiber intake goes up. If two slices of whole wheat bread containing 138 calories are replaced by a calorically equivalent handful of raw nuts, such as almonds or walnuts, approximately 24 nuts, you will match or exceed the 3.9 grams of fiber from the bread. Likewise, a calorie-equivalent salad of mixed greens, carrots, and peppers will match or exceed the amount of fiber in the bread. This is, after all, how primitive hunter-gatherer cultures, the cultures that first taught us about the importance of dietary fiber, obtained their fiber, through plentiful consumption of plant foods, not bran cereals or other processed fiber sources. Fiber intake is therefore not a concern if wheat elimination is paired with increased consumption of healthy foods. The dietary community assumes that you live on taco chips and jelly beans, and you therefore require foods fortified with various vitamins. However, all those assumptions fall apart if you don't exist on what you can obtain from a bag at the local convenience store, but consume real foods instead. B vitamins, such as B6, B12, folic acid, and thiamine, are added to baked, processed wheat products. Dietitians therefore warn us that forgetting these products will yield vitamin B deficiency. Also untrue. B vitamins are present in more than ample quantities in meats, vegetables, and nuts. While bread and other wheat products are required by law to have added folic acid, you'll exceed the folic acid content of wheat products several times over just by eating a handful of sunflower seeds or asparagus. A quarter cup of spinach or four asparagus spears, for instance, matches the quantity of folic acid in most breakfast cereals. Also, the folates of natural sources may be superior to the folic acid in fortified processed foods. Nuts and green vegetables are, in general, exceptionally rich sources of folate and represent the way that humans were meant to obtain it. Pregnant or lactating females are the exception and may still benefit from folic acid or folate supplementation to meet their increased needs in order to prevent neural tube defects. Likewise, vitamin B6 and thiamine are obtained in much greater amounts from 4 ounces of chicken or pork, an avocado, or 1/4 cup of ground flaxseed than from an equivalent weight of wheat products. In addition, eliminating wheat from your diet actually enhances B vitamin absorption. It is not uncommon, for instance, for vitamin B12 and folate, along with levels of iron, zinc, and magnesium, to increase with removal of wheat, since gastrointestinal health improves, and along with it, nutrient absorption. Eliminating wheat may be inconvenient, but it is certainly not unhealthy. Schedule your radical wheatectomy. Thankfully, eliminating all wheat from your diet is not as bad as setting up mirrors and scalpels to remove your own appendix without anesthesia. For some people, it's a simple matter of passing up the bagel shop or turning down the sweet rolls. For others, it can be a distinctly unpleasant experience, on par with a root canal or living with your in-laws for a month. In my experience, the most effective and ultimately the easiest way to eliminate wheat is to do it abruptly and completely. The insulin-glucose roller coaster caused by wheat, along with brain-addictive exorphin effects, makes it difficult for some people to gradually reduce wheat, so abrupt cessation may be preferable. Abrupt and complete elimination of wheat will, in the susceptible, trigger the withdrawal phenomenon. But getting through the withdrawal that accompanies abrupt cessation may be easier than the gnawing fluctuations of cravings that usually accompany just cutting back, not much different from an alcoholic trying to go dry. Nonetheless, some people are more comfortable with gradual reduction rather than abrupt elimination. Either way, the end result is the same. By now, I'm confident you're attuned to the fact that wheat is not just about bread. Wheat is ubiquitous. It's in everything. Many people, on first setting out to identify foods containing wheat, find it in nearly all the processed foods they have been eating, including the most improbable places, such as canned cream soups and healthy frozen dinners. Wheat is there for 2 reasons. 1, it tastes good. 2, it stimulates appetite. The latter reason is not for your benefit, of course, but for the benefit of food manufacturers. To food manufacturers, wheat is like nicotine in cigarettes, the best insurance they have to encourage continued consumption. Incidentally, other common ingredients in processed foods that increase consumption, though not as potent as wheat's effect, include high fructose corn syrup, sucrose, cornstarch, and salt. These are also worth avoiding. Removing wheat does, without question, require some forethought. Foods made with wheat have the inarguable advantage of convenience. Sandwiches and wraps, for example, are easily carried, stored, and eaten out of hand. Avoiding wheat means taking your own food to work and using a fork or spoon to eat it. It may mean you need to shop more often, and, heaven forbid, cook. Greater dependence on vegetables and fresh fruit can also mean going to the store, farmer's market, or greengrocer a couple of times a week. However, the inconvenience factor is far from insurmountable. It might mean a few minutes of advanced preparation, such as cutting and wrapping a hunk of cheese and putting it in a baggie to bring along to work, along with several handfuls of raw almonds and vegetable soup in a container. It might mean setting aside some of your spinach salad from dinner to eat the following morning for breakfast. Yes, dinner for breakfast, a useful strategy to be discussed later. People who habitually consume wheat products become crabby, foggy, and tired after just a couple of hours of not having a wheat product, often desperately searching for any crumb or morsel to relieve the pain, a phenomenon I've watched with dry amusement from my comfortable wheat-free vantage point. But once you've eliminated wheat from your diet, appetite is no longer driven by the glucose-insulin roller coaster of satiety and hunger, and you won't need to get your next fix of brain-active exorphins. After a 7 a.m. breakfast of two scrambled eggs with vegetables, peppers, and olive oil, for instance, you likely won't be hungry until noon or 1 p.m. Compare this to the 90 to 120-minute cycle of insatiable hunger most people experience after a 7 a.m. bowl of high-fiber breakfast cereal, necessitating a 9 o'clock snack and another 11 o'clock snack or early lunch. You can see how easy it becomes to cut the 350 to 400 calories per day from your overall consumption that results naturally and unconsciously from wheat elimination. You will also avoid the afternoon slump that many people experience at about 2 or 3 p.m., the sleepy, sluggish fog that follows a lunch of a sandwich on whole wheat bread, the mental shutdown that occurs because of the glucose high followed by the low. A lunch, for instance, of tuna without bread, mixed with mayonnaise or olive oil-based dressing, along with zucchini slices and a handful or several handfuls of walnuts, will not trigger the glucose insulin high-low at all, just a seamless normal blood sugar that has no sleep or fog-provoking effect. Most people find it hard to believe that wheat elimination can, in the long run, make their lives easier, not tougher. Wheat-free people are freed from the desperate cyclic scramble for food every 2 hours and are comfortable going for extended periods without food. When they finally sit down to eat, they are contented with less. Life simplified. Many people are, in effect, enslaved by wheat and the schedules and habits dictated to them by its availability. A radical wheatectomy therefore amounts to more than just removing one component of the diet. It removes a potent stimulant of appetite from your life, one that rules behavior and impulse frequently and relentlessly. Removing wheat will set you free. Fasting, easier than you think. Fasting can be one of the most powerful tools for regaining health. Weight loss, reduction in blood pressure, improved insulin responses, longevity, as well as improvement in numerous health conditions. Though fasting is often regarded as a religious practice, for example, Ramadan in Islam, Nativity Fast, Lent, and Assumption Fast in the Greek Orthodox Christian Church, it is among the most underappreciated strategies for health. For the average person eating a typical American diet that includes wheat, however, fasting can be a painful ordeal that requires monumental willpower. People who regularly consume wheat products are rarely able to fast successfully for more than a few hours, usually giving up in a frenzy of eating everything in sight. Interestingly, elimination of wheat makes fasting far easier, nearly effortless. Fasting means no food, just water. Vigorous hydration is also key for safe fasting, for a period of anywhere from 18 hours to several days. People who are wheat-free can fast for 18, 24, 36, 72, or more hours with little or no discomfort. The ability to fast, of course, mimics the natural situation of a hunter-gatherer who may go without food for days or even weeks when the hunt fails or some other natural obstacle to food availability develops. The ability to fast comfortably is natural. The inability to go for more than a few hours before crazily seeking calories is unnatural. Wheataholics and the Wheat Withdrawal Syndrome. Approximately 30% of people who remove wheat products abruptly from their diet will experience a withdrawal effect. Unlike opiate or alcohol withdrawal, wheat withdrawal does not result in seizures or hallucinations, blackouts, or other dangerous phenomena. The closest parallel to wheat withdrawal is the nicotine withdrawal that results from quitting cigarettes. For some people, the experience is nearly as intense. Like nicotine withdrawal, Wheat withdrawal can cause fatigue, mental fogginess, and irritability. It can also be accompanied by a vague dysphoria, a feeling of low mood and sadness. Wheat withdrawal often has the unique effect of diminished capacity to exercise that usually lasts from 2 to 5 days. Wheat withdrawal tends to be short-lived. While ex-smokers are usually still climbing the walls after 3 to 4 weeks, most ex-wheat eaters feel better after 1 week. The longest I've ever seen wheat withdrawal symptoms persist is 4 weeks, but that was unusual. The people who suffer through withdrawal are usually the same people who experienced incredible cravings for wheat products on their former diet. These are the people who habitually eat pretzels, crackers, and bread every day as a result of the powerful eating impulse triggered by wheat. Cravings recur in approximately 2-hour cycles, reflecting the glucose-insulin fluctuations that result from wheat products. Missing a snack or meal causes these people distress, shakiness, nervousness, headache, fatigue, and intense cravings, all of which can persist for the duration of the withdrawal period. What causes wheat withdrawal? It is likely that years of high-carbohydrate eating makes the metabolism reliant on a constant supply of readily absorbed sugars, such as those in wheat. Removing sugar sources forces the body to adapt to mobilizing and burning fatty acids instead of more readily accessed sugars, a process that requires several days to kick in. However, this step is a necessary part of converting from fat deposition to fat mobilization and shrinking the visceral fat of the wheat belly. Wheat withdrawal shares physiologic effects with carbohydrate-restricted diets. Atkins diet aficionados call it induction flu, the tired, achy feeling that develops with the no-carbohydrate induction phase of the program. Depriving the brain of wheat gluten-derived exorphins also adds to the withdrawal effect, the phenomenon that is likely responsible for the wheat cravings and dysphoria. There are 2 ways to soften the blow. One is to taper wheat gradually over a week, an approach that works for only some people. However, be warned. Some people are so addicted to wheat that they find even this tapering process to be overwhelming because of the repetitive reawakening of addictive phenomena with each bite of bagel or bun. For people with strong wheat addiction, going cold turkey, shall we call it cold noodle, may be the only way to break the cycle. It's similar to alcoholism. If your friend drinks 2/5 of bourbon a day and you urge him to cut back to 2 glasses a day, he would indeed be healthier and live longer, but it would be virtually impossible for him to do it. Second, if you believe that you are among those who will experience withdrawal, choosing the right time to transition off wheat is important. Select a period of time when you don't need to be at your best. For example, a week off from work or a long weekend. The mental fog and sluggishness experienced by some people can be significant, making prolonged concentration and work performance difficult. You should certainly not expect any sympathy from your boss or coworkers, who will probably scoff at your explanation and say things like, "Tom's afraid of the bagels." While wheat withdrawal can be annoying and even cause you to snap at loved ones and coworkers, it is harmless. I have never seen any genuine adverse effects, nor have any ever been reported, beyond those described above. Passing up the toast and muffins is difficult for some, charged with lots of emotional overtones, with chronic cravings that can revisit you for months and years. But it is good for your health, not harmful. Fortunately, not everyone experiences the full withdrawal syndrome. Some don't experience it at all, wondering what all the fuss is about. Some people can just quit smoking cold turkey and never look back. Same with wheat. No going back. Yet another odd phenomenon. Once you have followed a wheat-free diet for a few months, you may find that reintroduction of wheat provokes undesirable effects, ranging from joint aches to asthma to gastrointestinal distress. They can occur whether or not withdrawal happened in the first place. The most common re-exposure syndrome consists of gas, bloating, cramps, and diarrhea that lasts for 6 to 48 hours. In fact, the gastrointestinal effects of re-exposure to wheat in many ways resemble that of acute food poisoning, not unlike ingesting bad chicken or fecally contaminated sausage. The next most common re-exposure phenomenon is joint aches, a dull arthritis-like pain that usually affects multiple joints, such as elbows, shoulders, and knees, and that can last up to several days. Others experience acute worsening of asthma sufficient to require inhalers for several days. Behavioral or mood effects are also common, ranging from low mood and fatigue to anxiety and rage, usually in males. It's not clear why this happens, since no research has been devoted to exploring it. My suspicion is that low-grade inflammation was likely present in various organs during wheat-consuming days. It heals after wheat removal and reignites with re-exposure to wheat. I suspect that the behavioral and mood effects are due to exorphins, similar to what the schizophrenic patients experienced in the Philadelphia experiments. The best way to avoid re-exposure effects, avoid wheat once you've eliminated it from your diet. I gained 30 pounds from one cookie. No, it's not a National Enquirer headline alongside New York woman adopts alien. For people who have walked away from wheat, it might actually be true. In those susceptible to the addictive effects of wheat, all it takes is one cookie, cracker, or pretzel in a moment of indulgence. A bruschetta at the office party or a handful of pretzels at happy hour opens up the floodgates of impulse. Once you start, you can't stop. More cookies, more crackers, followed by shredded wheat for breakfast, sandwiches for lunch, more crackers for snacks, pasta and rolls for dinner, etc. Like any addict, you rationalize your behavior. It can't really be all that bad. This recipe is from a magazine article on healthy eating. Or, I'll be bad today, but I'll stop tomorrow. Before you know it, all the weight you lost is regained within weeks. I've seen people regain 30, 40, even 70 pounds before they put a stop to it. Sadly, those who suffered most severely from wheat withdrawal on removal are the same people who are prone to this effect. Unrestrained consumption can result even after the most minimal, harmless indulgence. People who are not prone to this effect may be skeptical, but I've witnessed it in hundreds of patients. People who are susceptible to this effect know quite well what it means. Short of taking opiate-blocking drugs such as naltrexone, there is no healthy and easy way to bypass this unpleasant but necessary stage. People prone to this phenomenon simply need to be vigilant and not let the little wheat devil standing on their shoulder whisper, "Go on, it's just one little cookie." What about other carbohydrates? After you've removed wheat from your diet, what's left? Remove wheat and you've removed the most flagrant problem source in the diet of people who follow otherwise healthy diets. Wheat is really the worst of the worst in carbohydrates. But other carbohydrates can be problem sources as well, though on a lesser scale compared to wheat. I believe that we've all survived a 40-year period of excessive carbohydrate consumption. Reveling in all the new processed food products that hit supermarket shelves from the 70s onward, we indulged in carbohydrate-rich breakfast foods, lunch, dinner, and snacks. As a result, for decades, we've been exposed to wide fluctuations of blood sugar and glycation, increasingly severe resistance to insulin, growth of visceral fat, and inflammatory responses, all of which leads us to have tired, beaten pancreases that are unable to keep up with the demand to produce insulin. Continued carbohydrate challenges forced on flagging pancreatic function leads us down the path of prediabetes and diabetes, hypertension, lipid abnormalities, low HDL, high triglycerides, small LDL particles, arthritis, heart disease, stroke, and all the other consequences of excessive carbohydrate consumption. For this reason, I believe that in addition to wheat elimination, an overall reduction in carbohydrates is also beneficial. It helps further unwind all the carbohydrate indulgent phenomena that we've cultivated all these years. If you wish to roll back the appetite-stimulating, insulin-distorting, and small LDL-triggering effects of foods beyond wheat, or if substantial weight loss is among your health goals, then you should consider reducing or eliminating the following foods in addition to eliminating wheat. Cornstarch and cornmeal. Cornmeal products such as tacos, tortillas, corn chips and cornbreads, breakfast cereals and sauces and gravies thickened with cornstarch. Snack foods. Potato chips, rice cakes, popcorn. These foods, like foods made of cornstarch, send blood sugar straight up to the stratosphere. Desserts. Pies, cakes, cupcakes, ice cream, sherbet, and other sugary desserts all pack too much sugar. Rice. White or brown, wild rice. Modest servings are relatively benign, but large servings, more than one half cup, generate adverse blood sugar effects. Potatoes. White, red, sweet potatoes, and yams cause effects similar to those generated by rice. Legumes. black beans, butter beans, kidney beans, lima beans, chickpeas, lentils. Like potatoes and rice, there is potential for blood sugar effects, especially if serving size exceeds 1/2 cup. Gluten-free foods. Because the cornstarch, rice starch, potato starch, and tapioca starch used in place of wheat gluten causes extravagant blood sugar rises, they should be avoided. Fruit juices, soft drinks. Even if they are natural, fruit juices are not that good for you. While they contain healthy components such as flavonoids and vitamin C, the sugar load is simply too great for the benefit. Small servings of 2 to 4 ounces are generally fine, but more will trigger blood sugar consequences. Soft drinks, especially carbonated, are incredibly unhealthy, mostly due to added sugars, high fructose corn syrup, colorings, and the extreme acid challenge from the carbonic acid carbonation. Dried fruit. Dried cranberries, raisins, figs, dates, apricots. Other grains. Non-wheat grains such as quinoa, sour gum, buckwheat, millet, and possibly oats lack the immune system and exorphin consequences of wheat. However, they post substantial carbohydrate challenges, sufficient to generate high blood sugars. I believe these grains are safer than wheat, but small servings, less than 1/2 cup, are key to minimize the blood sugar impact. In terms of mitigating wheat's adverse effects, there is no need to restrict fats, but some fats and fatty foods really should not be part of anyone's diet. These include hydrogenated trans fats in processed foods, fried oils that contain excessive byproducts of oxidation and AGE formation, and cured meats such as sausages, bacon, hot dogs, salami, etc., sodium nitrite, and AGEs. The good news. So what can you eat? There are several basic principles that can serve you well in your wheat-free campaign. Eat vegetables. You already knew that. While I am no fan of conventional wisdom, on this point, conventional wisdom is absolutely correct. Vegetables, in all their wondrous variety, are the best foods on planet Earth. Rich in nutrients, such as flavonoids and fiber, they should form the centerpiece of everyone's diet. Prior to the agricultural revolution, humans hunted and gathered their food. The gathered part of the equation refers to plants, such as wild onions, garlic mustard, mushrooms, dandelions, purslane, and countless others. Anyone who says, "I don't like vegetables," is guilty of not having tried them all, the same people who think that the world of vegetables ends at creamed corn and canned green beans. You can't not like it if you haven't tried it. The incredible range of tastes, textures, and versatility of vegetables means there are choices for everyone, from eggplant sliced and baked with olive oil and meaty portobello mushrooms, to a caprese salad of sliced tomatoes, mozzarella, fresh basil, and olive oil, to daikon radish and pickled ginger alongside fish. Extend your vegetable variety beyond your usual habits. Explore mushrooms, such as shiitake and porcini. Adorn cooked dishes with alliums, such as scallions, garlic, leeks, shallots, and chives. Vegetables shouldn't just be for dinner. Think about vegetables for any time of day, including breakfast. Eat some fruit. Notice that I did not say eat fruits and vegetables. That's because the two don't belong together, despite the phrase sliding out of the mouths of dietitians and others, echoing conventional thinking. While vegetables should be consumed ad libitum, fruit should be consumed in limited quantities. Sure, fruit contains healthy components, such as flavonoids, vitamin C, and fiber. But fruit, especially herbicided, fertilized, crossbred, gassed, and hybridized fruit, has become too rich in sugar. Year-round access to high-sugar fruits can overexpose you to sugars, sufficient to amplify diabetic tendencies. I tell patients that small servings, such as 8 to 10 blueberries, 2 strawberries, a few wedges of apple or orange, are fine. More than that starts to provoke blood sugar excessively. Berries, blueberries, blackberries, strawberries, cranberries, cherries, are at the top of the list with the greatest nutrient content and the least sugars, while bananas, pineapple, mango, and papaya need to be especially limited due to high sugar content. Eat raw nuts. Raw almonds, walnuts, pecans, pistachios, hazelnuts, Brazil nuts, and cashews are wonderful, and you can eat as much as you want. They're filling and full of fiber, monounsaturated oils, and protein. They reduce blood pressure, reduce LDL cholesterol, including small LDL particles, and consuming them several times a week can add 2 years to your life. You can't overdo nuts, provided they're raw. Raw means not roasted in hydrogenated cottonseed or soybean oils, not honey-roasted, not beer nuts, or any of the other endless variations in processed nuts, variations that transform healthy raw nuts into something that causes weight gain, high blood pressure, and increases LDL cholesterol. This is not the no more than 14 nuts at a time or 100 calorie pack recommendation issued by dietitians fearful of fat intake. Many people are unaware that you can eat or even buy raw nuts. They're widely available in the bulk section of grocery stores, in 3-pound bags in big box stores such as Sam's Club and Costco, and at health food stores. Peanuts, of course, are not nuts, but legumes. They cannot be consumed raw. Peanuts should be boiled or dry roasted, and the label should not include ingredients such as hydrogenated soybean oil, wheat flour, maltodextrin, cornstarch, sucrose, nothing but peanuts. Use oils generously. Curtailing oil is entirely unnecessary, part of the nutritional dietary blunders of the past 40 years. Use healthy oils liberally, such as extra virgin olive oil, coconut oil, avocado oil, and cocoa butter, and avoid polyunsaturated oils such as sunflower, safflower, corn, and vegetable oils, which trigger oxidation and inflammation. Try to minimize heating and cook at lower temperatures. Never fry, since deep frying is the extreme of oxidation that triggers, among other things, AGE formation. Eat meats and eggs. The fat phobia of the past 40 years turned us off from foods such as eggs, sirloin, and pork because of their saturated fat content. But saturated fat was never the problem. Carbohydrates in combination with saturated fat, however, cause measures of LDL particles to skyrocket. The problem was carbohydrates more than saturated fat. In fact, new studies have exonerated saturated fat as an underlying contributor to heart attack and stroke risk. There's also the issue of exogenous AGEs that accompany animal products. AGEs are unhealthy components of meats that are among the potentially unhealthy components of animal products, but not the saturated fat. Reduced exposure to exogenous AGEs in animal products is a matter of trying to cook at lower temperatures for shorter time periods whenever possible. Try to buy meats from grass-fed livestock, which have greater omega-3 fatty acid composition and are less likely to be antibiotic and growth hormone-ridden, and preferentially those raised under humane conditions and not in the Auschwitz equivalent of a factory farm. Don't fry your meats. High temperatures oxidize oils and create AGEs, and avoid cured meats entirely. You should also eat eggs, not one egg per week or some such non-physiologic restriction. Eat what your body tells you to eat, since appetite signals, once rid of unnatural appetite stimulants, such as wheat flour, will let you know what you require. Eat dairy products. Enjoy cheese, another wonderfully diverse food. Recall that fat is not the issue, so enjoy familiar full-fat cheeses, such as Swiss or cheddar, or exotic cheeses, such as Stilton, Crottin de Chavignol, Edam, or Comté. Cheese serves as a wonderful snack or the centerpiece of a meal. Other dairy products, such as cottage cheese, yogurt, milk, and butter, should be consumed in limited quantities of no more than 1 or 2 servings per day. I believe that adults should limit dairy products outside of cheese due to the insulinotropic effect of dairy proteins, the tendency that dairy protein has to increase pancreatic release of insulin. The fermentation process required to make cheese reduces the content of amino acids responsible for this effect. Dairy products should also be in the least processed form. For instance, choose full-fat, unflavored, unsweetened yogurt over sugar-containing, high-fructose corn syrup-sweetened yogurt. Most people with lactose intolerance are able to consume at least some cheese, provided it is real cheese that has been subjected to a fermentation process. You can recognize real cheese by the words culture or live culture in the list of ingredients, meaning a live organism was added to ferment the milk. Fermentation reduces lactose content in the final cheese product. People who are lactose intolerant also have the option of choosing dairy products that include added lactase enzyme or taking the enzyme in pill form. The subject of soy products can be surprisingly emotionally charged. I believe this is primarily because of the proliferation of soy, like wheat, in various forms in processed foods, along with the fact that soy has been the focus of much genetic modification. Because it is now virtually impossible to tell what foods have soy that has been genetically modified, I advise patients to consume soy in modest quantities, and preferably in fermented form. For example, tofu, tempeh, miso, and natto, since fermentation degrades the lectins and phytates in soy that can potentially exert adverse intestinal effects. Soy milk can be a useful milk substitute for those with lactose intolerance, but I believe that, for the above reasons, it is best consumed in limited quantities. Similar cautions apply to whole soybeans and edamame. Odds and ends. Olives, green, Kalamata, stuffed, in vinegar, in olive oil. Avocados, pickled vegetables, asparagus, peppers, radish, tomatoes, and raw seeds, pumpkin, sunflower, sesame, are among the nutritional odds and ends that provide variety. It's important to extend your food choices outside of familiar habits, since part of the success of diet is variety in order to provide plentiful vitamins, minerals, fibers, and phytonutrients. Conversely, part of the cause of failure of many modern commercial diets is their lack of variety. The modern habit of concentrating calorie sources in one food group, wheat for instance, means many nutrients will be lacking, thus the need for fortification. Condiments are to food as clever personalities are to conversation. They can run you through the full range of emotions and twists in reason and make you laugh. Keep a supply of horseradish, wasabi, and mustards, Dijon, brown, Chinese, Creole, chipotle, wasabi, horseradish, and the unique varieties of regional mustards. And vow to never use ketchup again, especially any made with high fructose corn syrup. Tapenades, spreads made of a paste of olives, capers, artichokes, portobello mushrooms, and roasted garlic, can be purchased ready-made to spare you the effort and are wonderful spreads for eggplants, eggs, or fish. You probably already know that salsas are available in wide variety or can be readily made in minutes using a food processor. Seasoning should not begin and end at salt and pepper. Herbs and spices not only are a great source of variety, but also add to the nutritional profile of a meal. Fresh or dried basil, oregano, cinnamon, cumin, nutmeg, and dozens of other herbs and spices are available in any well-stocked grocery store. Bulgur, kamut, barley, triticale, and rye share genetic heritage with wheat and therefore have at least some of the potential effects of wheat and should be avoided. Other non-wheat grains, such as oats, though for some gluten-intolerant people, especially those with immune-mediated diseases such as celiac disease, even oats may fall into the never list. Quinoa, millet, amaranth, teff, chia seed, and sour gum are essentially carbohydrates without the immune or brain effects of wheat. While not as undesirable as wheat, they do take a metabolic toll. Therefore, these grains are best used after the wheat withdrawal process is over, once metabolic goals and weight loss have been achieved, and a relaxation of diet is permissible. If you are among those with a powerful potential for wheat addiction, you should be careful with these grains as well. Because they are rich in carbohydrates, they also increase blood sugar flagrantly in some, though not all, people. Oatmeal, for instance, whether stone ground, Irish, or slow cooked, will cause blood sugar to skyrocket. No diet should be dominated by any of these grains, nor do you need them. But most people can do fine by ingesting these grains in modest quantities. For example, 1/4 to 1/2 cup. The exception, if you have proven gluten sensitivity, then you must meticulously avoid rye, barley, bulgur, triticale, kamut, and perhaps oats. In the world of grains, one grain stands apart, since it consists entirely of protein, fiber, and oils, flaxseed. Because it is essentially free of carbohydrates that increase blood sugar, ground flaxseed is the one grain that fits nicely into this approach. The unground grain is indigestible. Use ground flaxseed as a hot cereal, heated, for instance, with milk, unsweetened almond milk or coconut water, or soy milk with added walnuts or blueberries, or add it to foods such as cottage cheese or chilies. You can also use it to make a breading for chicken and fish. A similar cautionary note that applies to non-wheat grains also applies to legumes, outside of peanuts. Kidney beans, black beans, Spanish beans, lima beans, and other starchy beans have healthy components in them such as protein and fiber, but the carbohydrate load can be excessive if consumed in large quantities. A 1-cup serving of beans typically contains 30 to 50 grams of carbohydrates, a quantity sufficient to substantially impact blood sugar in many people. For this reason, as with non-wheat grains, small servings, 1/2 cup, are preferable. Beverages. It may seem austere, but water should be your first choice. 100% fruit juices can be enjoyed in small quantities, but fruit drinks and soft drinks are very bad ideas. Teas and coffee, the extracts of plant products, are fine to enjoy, with or without milk, cream, coconut milk, or full-fat soy milk. If an argument can be made for alcoholic beverages, the one genuine standout in health is red wine, a source of flavonoids, anthocyanins, and now popular resveratrol. Beer, on the other hand, is a wheat-brewed beverage in most instances, and is the one clear-cut alcoholic drink to avoid or minimize. Beers also tend to be high in carbohydrates, especially the heavier ales and dark beers. If you have positive celiac markers, you should not consume any wheat or gluten-containing beer at all. Some people just need to have the comfortable taste and feel of foods that are made of wheat, but don't want to provoke the health headaches. In the sample menu plan that starts in the next section, I include a number of possibilities for wheat-free substitutes, such as wheat-free pizza and wheat-free bread and muffins. Select recipes can be found on the accompanying CD-ROM. Vegetarians will, admittedly, have a bit of a tougher job, particularly strict vegetarians and vegans who avoid eggs, dairy, and fish. But it can be done. Strict vegetarians need to rely more heavily on nuts, nut meals, seeds, nut and seed butters, and oils, avocados and olives, and may have a bit more leeway with carbohydrate-containing beans, lentils, chickpeas, wild rice, chia seed, sweet potatoes, and yams. If non-genetically modified soy products can be obtained, then tofu, tempeh, and natto can provide another rich source of protein. The wheat belly nutritional approach for optimal health. Most adults are a metabolic mess, created in large part by excessive carbohydrate consumption. Eliminating the worst carbohydrate source of all, wheat, fixes much of the problem. However, there are other carbohydrate problem sources that, if full control over metabolic distortions and weight is desired, should also be minimized or eliminated. Here's a summary. Consume in unlimited quantities. Vegetables, except potatoes and corn, including mushrooms, herbs, squash. Raw nuts and seeds, almonds, walnuts, pecans, hazelnuts, Brazil nuts, pistachios, cashews, macadamias. Peanuts, boiled or dry roasted. Sunflower seeds, pumpkin seeds, sesame seeds, nut meals. Oils, extra virgin olive, avocado, walnut, coconut, cocoa butter, flaxseed, macadamia, sesame. Meats and eggs, preferably free-range and organic, chicken, turkey, beef, pork, buffalo, ostrich, wild game, fish, shellfish, eggs, including yolks. Cheese. Non-sugary condiments. Mustards, horseradish, tapenades, salsa, mayonnaise, vinegars, white, red wine, apple cider, balsamic, Worcestershire sauce, soy sauce, chili or pepper sauces. Others, flaxseed, ground, avocados, olives, coconut, spices, cocoa, unsweetened, or cacao. Consume in limited quantities. Non-cheese dairy, milk, cottage cheese, yogurt, butter. Fruit. Berries are the best. Blueberries, raspberries, blackberries, strawberries, cranberries, and cherries. Be careful of the most sugary fruits, including pineapple, papaya, mango, and banana. Avoid dried fruit, especially figs and dates, due to the excessive sugar content. Whole corn, not to be confused with cornmeal or cornstarch, which should be avoided. Fruit juices. Non-wheat, non-gluten grains. Quinoa, millet, sorghum, teff, amaranth, buckwheat, rice, brown and white, oats, wild rice. Legumes, black beans, kidney beans, butter beans, Spanish beans, lima beans. Lentils, chickpeas, potatoes, white and red, yams, sweet potatoes. Soy products, tofu, tempeh, miso, natto, edamame, soybeans. Consume rarely or never. Wheat products. Wheat-based breads, pasta, noodles, cookies, cakes, pies, cupcakes, breakfast cereals, pancakes, waffles, pita, couscous, rye, bulgur, triticale, kamut, barley. Unhealthy oils. Fried, hydrogenated, polyunsaturated, especially corn, sunflower, safflower, grapeseed, cottonseed, soybean. Gluten-free foods, specifically those made with cornstarch, rice starch, potato starch, or tapioca starch. Dried fruit, figs, dates, prunes, raisins, cranberries. Fried foods, sugary snacks, candies, ice cream, sherbet, fruit roll-ups, craisins, energy bars. Sugary fructose-rich sweeteners, agave syrup or nectar, honey, maple syrup, high fructose corn syrup, sucrose. Sugary condiments, jellies, jams, preserves, ketchup, if contains sucrose or high fructose corn syrup, chutney. Getting started, a week of a wheat-free life. Because wheat figures prominently in the world of comfort foods and the universe of processed convenience foods, and generally occupies a proud place at breakfast, lunch, and dinner, some people have a hard time envisioning what their life might look like without it. Going without wheat can be downright frightening. Breakfast, in particular, stumps many people. After all, if we eliminate wheat, we've cut out breakfast cereals, toast, English muffins, bagels, pancakes, waffles, donuts, and muffins. What's left? Plenty. But they won't necessarily be familiar breakfast foods. If you regard breakfast as just another meal, no different from lunch or dinner, the possibilities become endless. Ground flaxseed and ground nut meals, almonds, hazelnuts, pecans, walnuts, make great hot cereals for breakfast, heated with milk, coconut milk or water, unsweetened almond milk, or soy milk, and topped with walnuts, raw sunflower seeds, and blueberries or other berries. Eggs make a return to breakfast in all their glory, fried, over easy, hard-boiled, soft-boiled, scrambled. Add basil pesto, olive tapenade, chopped vegetables, mushrooms, goat cheese, olive oil, chopped meats, but not cured bacon, sausage, or salami, to your scrambled eggs for an endless variety of dishes. Instead of a bowl of breakfast cereal with orange juice, have a caprese salad of sliced tomatoes and sliced mozzarella, topped off with fresh basil leaves and extra virgin olive oil. Or save some of the salad from the previous evening's dinner for breakfast the next day. When in a hurry, grab a hunk of cheese, a fresh avocado, a plastic bag filled with pecans, and a handful of raspberries. Or try a strategy I call dinner for breakfast, transplanting foods you ordinarily think of as lunch or dinner foods into breakfast fare. While it may appear a little odd to uninformed observers, this simple strategy is an exceptionally effective way to maintain a healthy first meal of the day. Here is a sample of what a week-long wheat-free diet approach looks like. Note that once wheat is eliminated and an otherwise thoughtful approach to diet is followed, that is, eating a selection of foods not dominated by the processed food industry, but rich in real food, there is no need to count calories or adhere to formulas that dictate optimal percentages of calories from fat or proteins. These issues, very simply, take care of themselves, unless you have a medical condition that requires specific restrictions, such as gout, kidney stones, or kidney disease. So with the wheat belly diet, you will not find advice such as drink low-fat or fat-free milk, or limit yourself to 4 ounces of meat, since restrictions such as these are simply unnecessary when metabolism reverts back to normal, and it nearly always will, once the metabolism-distorting effects of wheat are absent. The only common diet variable in this approach is carbohydrate content. Because of the excessive carbohydrate sensitivity most adults have acquired through years of excessive carbohydrate consumption, I find that most do best maintaining daily carbohydrate intake to approximately 50 to 100 grams per day. An even stricter carbohydrate restriction is occasionally necessary if you are trying to undo prediabetes or diabetes, for example, less than 30 grams per day, while people who exercise for prolonged periods, for instance, marathon runners, triathletes, long-distance bikers, will need increased carbohydrate intake during exercise. Note that serving sizes specified are therefore just suggestions, not restrictions. Additional recipes are also included on the accompanying CD-ROM. Also note that anyone with celiac disease or other antibody-positive form of wheat and gluten intolerance will need to go the extra step of examining all ingredients used in this menu and in the recipes by looking for the gluten-free assurance on the package. All ingredients called for are widely available as gluten-free. Day 1. Breakfast. Hot coconut flaxseed cereal. Lunch. large tomato stuffed with tuna or crab meat, mixed with chopped onions or scallions, mayonnaise. Selection of mixed olives, cheeses, pickled vegetables. Dinner. Wheat-free pizza. Mixed green salad or mixed red and green leaf lettuce, with radicchio, chopped cucumber, sliced radishes, worry-free ranch dressing. Carrot cake.